This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
If you have a problem with it, build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me this week. And it's a busy week, as always, in the NBA. The All-Star Game is in the books. A bit of news coming out of All-Star Weekend. Anthony Davis made some comments about his future. We've got the buyout deadline coming up in a couple weeks. We'll talk about some names on that mark and look ahead to some post-All-Star surprises. Rohan Nadkarni is back in studio, and we talked to him about all that and much more. A little bit later on, my conversation with Kemba Walker. The original interview aired on SITV. You can check it out there going to SI.TV. This is the extended version. Got into everything with Kemba Walker from his time growing up in New York City, going to UConn, playing for Jim Calhoun, working with Michael Jordan in Charlotte, and why he still wants to be a Charlotte Hornet in the long term. So stick around for that and much more with Kemba Walker. All right, joining me now on the podcast, fresh from Charlotte, North Carolina, and all the All-Star festivities, Rohan Nadkarni. What's up, Rohan?
I'm doing well, Chris. I missed you this weekend in Charlotte. Just curious where you were. Seems like a pretty big NBA weekend to not have, you know, one of our most accomplished NBA writers there.
Oh, okay. Well, a couple things. One, I was in St. Thomas.
Okay.
And as long as the NBA is keeping the trade deadline prior to All-Star Weekend, you may have seen the last of me at All-Star Weekend.
I see. Okay.
Secondly, let's not pretend like All-Star Weekend is this big,
oh wow,
reporting,
this is a take. Okay,
adventure that you're getting so much stuff by elbowing your way in and out of gaggles for a period of what, one day really? The Saturday night media availability.
I don't know. You seem like the kind of guy who knows how to work your way around one of those rooms. So, you know, it would have been nice to just have you there, maybe, you know, working as a mentor even. But it's fine. I get it.
That's not going
to
happen.
I'm sure you had important things to do in St. Thomas.
I did. I had to try and depastify a little bit and get myself ready and refreshed for the second half of the season. By the way, reporters, like, their Instagram stories betray what they say they're doing at All-Star
Weekend.
That's
very true.
It's
That's
like,
very true.
Here for, you know, X newspaper, but here's your Instagram story. At the Jordan Brand party, at the GQ party, at party X, Y, and Z. Come on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I made it a point not to Instagram story from this weekend just because of how annoyed I was at everyone else's Instagram stories. Mm.
I have the all-time, like, All-Star mess story where it was New Orleans, like, 10 years ago, I want to say, probably 10 years ago, and I went out on Friday night in Bourbon Street, my first time ever going out on Bourbon Street. And I wound up going to Pat O'Brien's and having about 14 hurricanes, which was not good because beyond the alcohol, anybody that's ever had a hurricane, beyond the alcohol,
the sugar,
the sugar, man. Yeah. So I was hungover on Saturday, and I was too hungover to go to the game on Sunday. Now, that would have been fine ordinarily because nobody cares, but that was the same year that I think Jason Kidd was traded mid-game or mid-weekend. So I got an email from one of the editors who's no longer here, Mike Bevins, asking me to do, like, we had the one-page columns back then, do a one-page column on the impact of Jason Kidd getting traded. So I'd sit down and write it. My brain just wasn't working, like, at all. So I wrote it, I filed it, and I remember the feedback from Bevins, something along the lines of, Mannix couldn't have fucked this up any worse than it already is. Like, it looks like the second run through of, like, a high school newspaper's. It was some bad, bad piece of criticism. So ever since then, I've tried to maintain best behavior at All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it helped that this year, you know, last year in LA, you had the extra 3 hours to kind of get in trouble. This year I was just too tired. This is what All-Star Weekend is really like, if people want to know. All-Star Weekend is basically every reporter gets invited to the same party. Every reporter tries to act like it's really cool how they got invited to this party that every other reporter got invited to. And what it ends up being is like 12 people at a 2 Chainz concert that they don't really have a view of, and they're all Instagram storying it. And you're just awkwardly not sure if you should say hi to people or not because you follow them on Twitter, but you've never met them before in real life.
The people with the 9,000 consecutive Instagram stories of a concert, I'm looking at you, Arash Markazi, I have issue with. Like, that's just too much. It's too much. Just one will do. Just let me know where you are. All right. But there was some interesting pieces of news that came out of All-Star Weekend. First and foremost, Anthony Davis, the Pelicans forward, has requested a trade, didn't get a trade, shows up at All-Star, and you knew the firing squad was going to be there, asking about his decision, asking about Boston, asking about everything that's gone on. And Anthony Davis, from where I was reading and watching, remarkably forthright, you know, with his answers there. He was asked repeatedly about Boston, and he said repeatedly, Boston is on my list.
Of course, you bring up the Celtics right away.
Well, that's the biggest piece of news.
Okay,
you tell me one piece of news bigger than that over All-Star Weekend.
Let's get through your point first.
Point taken. So Anthony Davis says Boston's on his list. He doubles back on an NBA TV interview later and says, well, all 29 teams are on my list. Something tells me the Memphis Grizzlies are not on his list or the Orlando Magic, but that goes without saying. What did you make of Anthony Davis on multiple occasions saying the Celtics were on his list?
So I think Anthony Davis was trying to do a little bit of damage control this weekend, and I don't know that it fully worked. I think what we're seeing right now with Davis is him trying to take control back of the narrative. I think he realized he became a little bit of the bad guy with this Lakers stuff. It wasn't a good look. What I'm curious to know is, does Anthony Davis want to play for the Lakers? Does Anthony Davis trying to force his way to the Lakers, to what extent are Anthony Davis's dad, who seems to be pretty clear about him not wanting him to go to Boston, to what extent does Anthony Davis's dad and Rich Paul not want him to play in Boston? Now, when AD said all 29 other teams are on my list, real quick, that sucks for the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, that's an insane thing to say. Pretty much, I want to be anywhere except here. That's, to me, kind of an underrated aspect of all this is, you know, the Pelicans are kind of getting dragged and humiliated in a way that is a little mean almost at this point. So that was something interesting to me. But my – what's going off in just talking to other guys on our staff, talking to some people around All-Star Weekend is – and I can't report this. I can't say I know for a fact, but what the whispers are saying around the league at this point at least is – there might be some disconnect between what AD wants and what some of the people around him want.
I concur. I think that's a very reasonable interpretation of what's going on, because you can't look at the people involved in this situation and not wonder if there are any conflicts. You know, Rich Paul is the agent for Anthony Davis. He's also the agent for LeBron James. Is Rich Paul want to pair Anthony Davis and LeBron James more for the benefit of LeBron or for the benefit of Anthony Davis? Because, look, you give me grief about the Celtics. I get it. But if you look at it strictly objectively, if Anthony Davis really is all about winning and Kyrie Irving decides to stay, which is a different conversation, but if he's all about winning and Kyrie decides to stay, look at those two, just those two situations. Where does he have the better chance to win? Over the next 5 years, what gives him the best chance to win?
It may be Boston, but can we just... I know that you're all about Celtics exceptionalism and you're wearing your Shamrock underwear right now.
I'm just wondering why it's not... I mean, honest to God, I tell people this all the time. I couldn't give a damn if the Celtics are good or bad. The only thing I care about in relation to the Celtics is that when they go deep into the playoffs, I get to sleep in my own bed. Like, that's the only thing I care about when it comes to, you know, Boston. I just look at it objectively. If you're saying to everybody, all I want to do is win, man. That's about me, my legacy.
Okay, well, let's play that through, right? Because right now the Celtics are doing worse than most of us expected. I think that's fair to say. A lot of people thought they'd run away with the conference this year. They're not as good as Milwaukee. I mean, who do they have to give up to get Anthony Davis? Do they give up part of that young core that's so important? Okay? I mean, I think it's fair to say, again, I think it's a fairer argument and a closer argument than you realized then. Do I want to play with LeBron James? or do I want to roll the dice on the Celtics? Because the Bucks look like they could be really good for a long time. The Raptors look like they could be really good for a long time. And now the Sixers look like they could be really good for a long time. And if the Warriors lose Kevin Durant this summer, then the Lakers have an opportunity to step up into that void with Anthony Davis. So I think it's – I hear you, and I know that I do give you grief about the Celtics. They do have a promising long-term outlook, but I think it's a closer argument than what you're saying if Anthony Davis were to go to L.A. and a lot of pieces get moved around this summer.
Look, the bottom line, though, if we're looking at it over the next 5 months, if Kyrie Irving decides to stay, and there are mixed opinions on that inside the organization and outside the organization. Some people inside the organization, some people say definitively he's going to stay. He wants the money. 5 years, close to $200 million. He's staying for that. There are other people that are like, yeah, I'm not so sure, man. Like, I don't know how much he likes it here. I don't know how much he likes, you know, being kind of the face of this team. He might be gone. But if Kyrie stays, it's not a question of whether Anthony Davis wants to be in Boston or not. He'll be in Boston because the Celtics will go to the mat to go and get him. And then they'll roll the dice that with Kyrie signed to a long-term deal and a team that theoretically could get to the finals next year, that he'll want to stay on that. That's all I'm saying. It almost doesn't matter what Anthony Davis wants right now. Because if the Celtics can get Kyrie Irving to stay, they're going to get Anthony Davis because they can outbid everybody.
Sure. But just having said that, let's say the Celtics do go to the mat, right? They give them Tatum, Brown, right? Is that the mat?
I would say, my read of it, and it's a very early read of it, it's Tatum and some draft picks. It's Brown, Smart, bunch of draft picks kind of thing.
Okay. So in that case, again, I agree with your hypothesis in terms of it really doesn't matter what Anthony Davis wants, right? Because if the Celtics really want to go get him, they can go get him and deal with the consequences later, just like what the Raptors did with Kawhi. But if the Celtics are giving up that much versus the Lakers trading for Anthony Davis and then signing another, you know, not top-tier guy, but second-tier guy in free agency, I might roll the dice with that Lakers team over that Celtics team that's AD and Kyrie's your second-best player.
Their ability to sign that guy is challenging. Like, the money they would have
certainly,
left.
Certainly.
It would be, I don't know what the exact, tricky, I think it's like 15 maybe, you know, after.
I think they can get to a max slot if they need to.
I don't know. With Anthony Davis on the roster?
I think there's like one of those things where it's like it would depend on the timing.
I mean, teams can always get to a max slot if they have to. The Rockets are proof of that over the years. I don't know. But Davis, I mean, I guess the bigger question is, did it surprise you when Davis said, yeah, Boston's on my list. Three times he said, Boston's on my list. After all this, after the entire narrative was, and coming out of it, you know, the spin was, no, Boston's not really on his list. It's like, don't believe him. Believe what's being said behind the scenes. It really does seem like there's two different factions kind of moving, going on here.
It's not that I don't believe him. I do think what the point he was trying to make was less about Boston and more so, hey, I'm not doing this just because I want to be one of those guys that lives in LA and all I care about is my brand. I think the point Anthony Davis was trying to make was, I just want to be traded to a team that will give me a chance to win. That's the narrative he was trying to set. And I think by mentioning Boston, I think he was asked, you know, he was asked about the Celtics specifically. I think the point he was trying to make there was, I'm not saying X franchise is a bad franchise. I'm saying I'll go wherever I can win, and right now that's not New Orleans. That was my takeaway. My takeaway was him trying to reset the narrative. Do I think that, you know, he's going to hold out or something like that if he's traded to Boston? No, certainly not. I mean, we see he's trying to play right now. I just think that the point he was trying to make was less about the Celtics and more so he's trying to take back ownership of kind of the narrative around him.
Do you think he's softening at all on not playing the rest of the season? Because this has got to end at some point.
I have to imagine. I mean, it's just getting awkward for everyone a lot. I mean, I wrote about it after Media Day. Nobody's winning this right now. Until the team that trades for him, this is a bad look for the NBA. This is a bad look for Anthony Davis. You can, separate from the argument of do you think players have too much power, I don't really care about that. I don't care how much power players have. What Anthony Davis is doing is he's creating so much pressure for wherever he does end up. And we've seen what it's done to, you know, LeBron his first year in Miami. To an extent, KD. KD's on such a good team that it hasn't really mattered. But the pressure, the attention, the pressure does get to these guys a little bit. So, you know, nobody's winning right now. The Pelicans are in an awful situation. And they have to hear Anthony Davis saying, yeah, take me to any other 29 teams. I think the NBA's handled this poorly by kind of trying to force the Pelicans' hand. You have to imagine Anthony Davis wouldn't mind kind of being out of the spotlight for a bit.
Did you see the video of Durant and Kyrie Irving in the hallway? And I did. A lot of people interpreting Kyrie going
saying
two
max slots. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's where they're going to have that discussion.
Of
clearly,
course,
in
yeah,
a hallway.
In front of all the cameras. Yeah.
Not in their hotel room or at a nightclub or wherever they were doing over the weekend. Right there in front of all these people walking by. They're going to go two max slots.
Yeah, that was great. Kyrie was also the only one, the last person on the court watching KD get his MVP trophy if you're really trying to read the tea leaves.
That's... Want to really get in the nitty-gritty and interpret all that.
Well, that's what us reporters were doing at All-Star Weekend, not gallivanting on some beach in the Caribbean. You know?
Really? Most of you weren't nursing hangovers. Sure, I believe that. The All-Star game itself, you cool with Team X versus Team Y, LeBron versus Giannis, LeBron versus whomever?
I like it a lot. I saw that there was like some very mild backlash to it in certain corners of Twitter, which maybe doesn't mean anything. It probably doesn't. I love it. I think it's good. I think the games the last 2 years have been competitive in the second half, way more so than they were the years prior. There are definitely tweaks. I mean, we talked to Brad Beal. Check out that interview on Crossover TV on SITV. But we talked to Brad Beal, and Brad Beal wants the draft to be better. He thinks it can be even better. He told us, let's do it in person. He said, let's get all the guys in one room, put them on a court, do it pickup style. That would be fun. I think that the draft – the televised version was already pretty fun. It was cool to see those guys kind of go back and forth. I like it a lot. I'm not the first person to have this idea. A lot of people have said this. I would like the idea of them coming up with team names. I think that would be kind of funny to see what they come up with. It's also a little silly sometimes when Team LeBron is like, yeah, these are my guys. It's like, all right, LeBron, KD. So I like the format a lot. I think we've gotten better games the last couple years. This is the best it can be. You're not going to get these guys to play a full 48 minutes of a competitive game unless one of these companies wants to come down and say, we're giving the winning team $1 million each and the losers get nothing. Unless you do something radical like that, it's not going to get better than this. And I enjoyed the game a lot.
See, that was my point, though. Can you get a Bud Light or some other huge money sponsor in exchange for like getting their logo on the court during the game? To put up, what is it, 24 million
yeah.
or $12 million. You know, $1 million for the winning player on each team and X more for the coaches or whatever. That's the only thing that's going to move the needle. We saw during the Future Stars game, Kyle Kuzma.
He wanted that MVP.
He wanted the 25 grand. Kyle Kuzma wanted the 25 grand that comes with being the MVP. It's the guy that's making
He's on his
money.
Rookie deal, though, in his defense.
He's a seven-figure guy, though, at some point. And he knows he's going to make even more money down the line. But if 25 grand will make Kyle Kuzma play harder in a Future Stars game, I got to believe, no matter how much money these guys make in their lives, that you put $1 million a person on the table, they will play hard for 48 minutes.
I also like the idea of making it winner-take-all. Now, maybe that would discourage some guys from participating at all, but winner take all, I think you'd see it get a little feisty. But it was funny. I mean, the second half, you see them running some sets. You see guys kind of actually trying to play defense. I thought the intensity picked up to the level where it should be for an All-Star game. As much as I'd love to see Russ go all out, it's probably better for everyone involved that we don't have guys getting hurt or anything like that during the game. So I really liked where the game was this year.
In fairness, nobody does All-Star games well. Like, none of the four major sports do.
That's
well.
True. And I think this is the best one. I really do. I'm not just saying that. I mean, the problem with baseball is it's such a high variance sport that you end up with, you know, games that have to end in a draw or, you know, guys get one at bat. This, I think, is the best chance in any sport for guys to actually showcase what they can do, just the nature of basketball. And I think for the most part, they do a good job. And it's fun. The mixed teams, it's fun. I mean, the moment where Steph hit the three-pointer over Clay, that was a lot of fun. The Steph alley-oop to Giannis, I mean, that stuff's really cool.
I think the first three innings of the baseball All-Star game are really good because you have the one pitcher, the starter, usually going that three. I have just a vivid memories of Pedro Martinez just mowing down, I think, McGuire, Sosa. That game was at Fenway. So.
I have vivid memories of Dan Uggla going like 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts or something like that.
Tough memory to have. slam dunk contest, I'm kind of done with that. I'm done with the slam dunk contest.
The problem with the slam dunk contest is people's expectations are way too high. Here's what you have to realize about the slam dunk contest. Most of the good dunks have been dunked already, okay? And I graded it again for Saturday night because I was working that weekend. I graded it an A, and this is why I gave it an A. All you can really ask for from the slam dunk contest now, you want to look back and be like, you have one memory, at least one memory, right? We just talked about it, your memory from, you know, that Fenway game. We can look back on this dunk contest and say, oh, that Hamdou Diallo dunk where he went over Shaq and put his elbow in the rim. That was pretty awesome. As long as you get one of those dunks, I think it's a success. You'd love to see the big names in it. Maybe next year, again, Magic Johnson threatened to do it once. Someone's got to step up. Nike, Jordan, someone's got to step up and say, we're going to give $1 million to the guy who wins this, and you're going to get some good people in the contest, and you're going to see some good dunks. But until then, I think it's more about calibrating expectations.
Next year might be different because the expectation is Zion will be in it.
Right. And in Chicago, Giannis has teased it. Maybe Donovan Mitchell will get in there.
But overall, I'd rather they dump the dunk contest and have a King of the Court competition. One-on-one, you know, guys go in and out like King of the Court. Any kid that played basketball knows what King of the Court is. I grew up playing it against my friends. And I think you'll get more star-level players.
I don't think so, because I don't think guys are going to want to embarrass themselves one-on-one.
But how many would? How many, like, you think, like, LeBron's afraid to go up against Durant one-on-one?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
He wouldn't even guard him in the finals.
I mean, yeah, but, like, something like this, like, for the award, maybe put some money on that, too. Like, for the award of being known as the best one-on-one player in the NBA, I think you have far more high-level players step up and do it. Maybe not the bigs, obviously, and maybe you have some smaller guys that don't want to do it because you don't want to get posted up. Maybe you have to make some rules that affect the deal with the height disadvantages. But I think it's some big names. I'd be more interested to see who's the best one-on-one player than watching, like, back-end bench guys do, like, cool dunks.
It's possible. I think an easy fix right now is putting the three-point contest last and stop putting that much pressure on the dunk contest as the marquee event.
Because you get skills competition first.
I like the skills competition a lot. I actually think that has potential to be better.
Jason
the skills
Tatum.
Competition was fun this year.
Big shot.
Oh, my
Big
goodness.
Shot Tatum.
Get over it.
That's what we do. All right, so we head into the second half of the season, which isn't really the second half of the season because it's only about a quarter of the way left. A quarter of the season is left. Most interesting storyline to you in the second half of the season is what?
It's got to be the Lakers. Are they going to make the playoffs? I believe they're three games out. Heading into the second half, they're behind the Kings and the Clippers. That's the biggest one. I mean, we haven't had a playoffs without LeBron or D-Wade since before they were in the league, and we're looking at that right now. That, to me, is going to be super interesting. Can they kind of rebound from all the rumors, all the speculation? You know, obviously, an underrated aspect of all of this is I think they'd be pretty comfortably in the playoffs if LeBron had never gotten hurt. They were hitting a nice rhythm before his groin injury. The defense was actually looking pretty good. I think they'd be pretty comfortably in. And now people have seemed to have forgotten that a little bit when they're talking about, hey, is this what's going to happen here? But can he do it? I mean, there's a time every season where it looks like LeBron is going to get counted out. And it happened with the Cavs the last couple years. And he manages to find a way. But the degree of difficulty here is way higher. As a first year in how many years, he didn't have an all-star teammate. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see if the Lakers can make the playoffs.
This might be LeBron's most challenging task. Nah, I won't say that, because coming back from 3-1 in the finals is
and getting last year's Cleveland team to the finals.
Yeah, getting those last few years, getting that Cleveland team to the finals. But this is an incredibly challenging task for LeBron, because I look at this team, and in addition to LeBron, you know, not being prime LeBron on both ends of the floor, you've also got a bunch of guys that maybe aren't, you know, kind of willing to be galvanized and don't want and don't have the same level of equity in that team that LeBron does. And looking around going like, you know, I was almost traded like 2 weeks ago. I'm probably going to be gone this off season. What's motivating me to go out and play all out, you know, for the rest of the season? They've got a stretch coming up. First four games out of the break. I think it's two games against New Orleans, one against Memphis, then the Houston game there. They got to win 3 out of 4 right away, because if they start losing, maybe they fall 4 or 5 games back, I think then they could be in some pretty significant trouble, because that it's not built like a team that's ready to come back. But you look at that entire, you know, field, that the 8 seed there, you know, who are you betting on?
That's like, the thing. The Clippers look like they might want to miss the playoffs.
I mean, the Clippers front office wants them to miss the playoffs.
Clearly.
Because they get to keep that draft pick. The coaching staff, they're not going to tank.
For sure.
Players are certainly not going to tank. They don't give a damn. But they're interesting. Like, you lose your best scorer, you got to kind of slide at some point, right? You got to fall off. Then there's the Kings out there. And the Kings should make the playoffs, because the Kings, I don't want to hear about the Kings being this kind of feel-good story. They haven't made the playoffs in
The Kings are, of course, a feel-good story. What's wrong with
you? How is that possible? They haven't made the playoffs in 12 years. We're talking about a team that's had like 72 lottery picks in the last, you know, decade. And now we're like, well, great, they're making the playoffs. They should have made the playoffs, Rohan, 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, I don't The past is irrelevant right now. You love to do this. Somehow you're going to bring up Hasheem Thabeet.
How are they a feel-good story? But how are they a feel-good story?
Because they're finally going to make the playoffs after missing it for so many years in a row, and they have fun young players.
They do. It doesn't take away from, like, the Harry Giles on that team, the Bagleys, De'Aaron Fox. I love the backcourt. Yeah, Fox and Buddy Hield.
Awesome.
Buddy Hield's a better player than I thought he was going to be. Buddy Hield's
turned into a real, real solid contributor.
I thought he'd be kind of a sixth or seventh man.
Bagley, also, I'm happy for Bagley because there was going to be a lot of people taking a shit on the Kings if he didn't work out.
Yeah. Look, I push back on the, like, Kings, these upstart plucky Kings are going to do it. Like, they should have done it a while ago, man. Like, their front office over the years in previous administrations and regimes, and this one has kind of screwed that up. But, you know, they should. That's the team. If you just removed kind of the name, like the Kings from them, you'd say Sacramento should make the playoffs because that team looks like it's the most talented and has the most athletes that they're playing with great pace this year. They should have played this way last year. Mm-hmm. Like, with De'Aaron Fox, they were 30th in the league in pace last year.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Like, how are you 30th in the league in pace when you have a point guard that's a blur? So they're playing the right style this year, and it's paid off. I think they should be the team. And they're a team, too. Like, if you're looking at, like, the Clippers make the playoffs, it's kind of like a letdown because you lose that draft pick. The Lakers make it. It's interesting from the NBA's perspective because you get probably Warriors versus Lakers in the first round. That series is always relegated to NBA TV anyway. Now you might get it like primetime ESPN. But the Kings, like, they're one of those teams that so badly needs the playoffs. Like, they don't need the 13th pick in the draft. They need these young guys to get a playoff appearance. So if you're Sacramento, you're going all out. Every game is life or death to make the
Without
postseason.
Without a doubt. I know you want to get to your second half storyline, but I just want to run a quick question by you. Suppose the Lakers, whatever even happens to them this season, make the playoffs, miss the playoffs. If they don't get Anthony Davis, what is their path to building a title contender?
It's hard. I don't know that I see it because I don't, and a lot can change, but I don't think that...
They don't seem to be in play for any of the big guys.
That's what I'm saying. The top tier guys, when you talk to the people kind of around them a little bit, you know, the Lakers are in the mix because they're the Lakers and LeBron, but that's like second or third on the list. Now, maybe you go out and you... If Philadelphia plays around with Jimmy Butler, maybe overpay for him. But even that, does that make you... I mean, Jimmy Butler, I've always said this, at some point you're probably going to be paying for past performance because his body might fail him, as it has a couple of times in the last couple of years. I don't know what their path is because LeBron, we're seeing awesome offensive force, still can carry a team in ways that maybe no player can, but his ability to do it wanes every single year. It gets a little more hard... and a little bit tougher to do that every single year. So I'm not sure what their path is to that. And you look at it, the class of 2020, not good. I mean, Draymond Green, I think, is the best player. Everybody else is restricted.
It's Davis, but...
Well, yeah, you're
but
right.
But then you're waiting another couple of years.
And you're assuming that after that, whoever Anthony Davis is traded to, that he's not going to want to stay in that spot. So their time is now. Like, I got it. I understood why Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka were going hard after Davis... And we're frustrated that they couldn't engage New Orleans on this, but you know their window is pretty tight with LeBron these next couple of years. My second half storyline: Denver Nuggets. Can Denver keep up this torrid pace? Denver's only, as we speak, two games back at the top seed in the Western Conference, and they keep getting guys healthy. You know, Isaiah Thomas just came back before the break. Presumably, Gary Harris is going to get healthy in the next couple of weeks. They go deep. I think it's like seven guys averaging double figures. 10 guys averaging like 6 points per game. A lot of anonymity on that team. You know, Monty Harris and Malik Beasley and Torrey Craig. I mean, these are guys that nobody would know outside of the hardcore NBA types, but they're getting it done. And I'm just wondering, can they keep this pace up? Can they hold off Oklahoma City, which is a couple games back of them? And can they leapfrog Golden State? Because if they can leapfrog Golden State, that gives them the slimmest of windows to win a series like that. Because they're the best home team in the NBA, 25-9, I think their record is. Playing in Mile High, we know, is tough for anybody. So if they can get to a conference finals, they're already playing with confidence, and to have a potential Game 7 on their home floor, it just opens it a crack, just a crack of it. But my question with them is, you know, you got guys, and I was looking at these numbers last night, you got guys that are playing extraordinary minutes for them. Like the guys I just mentioned, the Beasleys, the Craigs, Hernan Gomez, like they... are not used to playing this many minutes. Will they wear down as the season goes on? And when you get to the playoffs, is Jokic good enough to be your alpha in a postseason series? Is Jamal Murray, who I think is the wild card in all this, is he good enough to take on all the great point guards during the Western Conference and be your perimeter scorer in that series. They, to me, are maybe the most fascinating team in the league because I can see them. I don't think any of the teams in the East can beat Golden State. I think Denver might be the only team in the West. Not the only team. That's too strong. One of a few teams in the West that could do it.
Well, first of all, thank you for finally catching up to what I've been saying since October, before the season, when I, the only writer at Sports Illustrated, picked the Denver Nuggets to make the NBA Finals. In all seriousness, I
wasn't working here then. So
yeah, that's true. I think about the Nuggets way more than I should. I'm like up late at night trying to figure out how the Nuggets are going to make the NBA Finals. I have a lot of thoughts about them. First of all, Monte Morris and Malik Beasley, their backup backcourt, could be a starting backcourt for a number of teams in the league. That's how good Morris and Beasley have been for them. You talked about Jamal Murray as the wild card. I think Murray has star potential. I almost look at Gary Harris as a little bit of their wild card. I think Gary Harris, it sucks because he's been hurt so much this year during what's been their most successful time. I think he's the second best player on the team. I like him a little bit more than Murray. I think Harris is a two-way player, just very sound offensively. His two-man game with Jokic is just as good as Murray's. I think if he gets healthy and he comes into his own, he's the kind of guy that I think has a leap to take as well. What I'm worried about them, and it's a little bit of a trope, it's a little bit of a cliche, but there's something to be said about guys who've never been in a playoff series together. Usually teams, unless you have, you know, a KG Ray Allen and a Paul Pierce or a LeBron Wade and Bosch, it's very hard to make that deep playoff run your first year together as a core. This is a team that's never even made the playoffs before. You know, Jokic has never been there. Harris, how are those guys going to respond? Jokic has been probably a top five player in the league this year. He deserves MVP love. He's been outstanding. What's going to happen to him in a playoff series? We don't know. We don't know what's going to be like when teams are scheming against him so hard every night. We saw what happened when they got the Warriors' attention in Denver. I mean, the Warriors put a hurt on him, which in a way is a sign of respect that you could make the Warriors care about a regular season game. But I don't know what they do. I mean, this goes to the Warriors a little bit, but it's fascinating to me what Golden State is going to do in the playoffs. Who's going to play the last 3 minutes of the game? Iguodala and Draymond? Or is it going to be Draymond and Cousins? Because if they go big, that might play into the hands of some teams a little bit. You know, if the Warriors are playing Cousins the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, that might help Denver. But if they're playing small, if they're playing the old school death lineup, I don't know who Jokic guards there, what he does. So it's going to be very interesting. I think about Denver a lot, but I want people to keep an eye on Gary Harris because I think if he gets healthy and starts playing up to his potential, that takes them to an even another level.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. And one of the things that worried me too was their defense as it slowly slipped since the start of the season. Like they came out gangbusters with a top five defense.
And it's looked bad lately. I do think the injuries have played a role. Again, Harris is probably their best perimeter defender. So I want to judge that unit when everyone's ready to go, but it has been worse.
Yeah, their perimeter defense especially. They had an East Coast trip where they went 0-3 and they were just getting gashed from beyond the three-point line. That's something that made me worry a little bit. Then I watched them come back and they beat Miami and somebody else there, another quasi-playoff team. Sacramento. There you go. Yeah. Sacramento's quasi-playoff team. So that defense worries me. And that was a defense that wasn't good last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, are they going to slip back into that kind of 20-ish range? And if they do, that's not going to be good enough to beat any of the top-tier teams in the West. But they're really interesting to me. If they can make a run, I'd be, as the team with home court advantage, they got two games left against Golden State, home and away. If they can pull that off, I think that gives them half a chance to score the upset there. I only finish with the buyout market. And we've already seen the buyout market have an impact on a number of teams, Houston especially. I mean, where would they be without Kenneth Faried and without Austin Rivers? I mean, those two guys helped prop them up during the Chris Paul injury spell. Faried in particular, like, geez. Like,
good for him. Good
for
Kenneth
Faried. He was like staple to the bench in Brooklyn. Now he's, he was starting for a long time in Houston. So we've seen the buyout market have an impact. Wesley Matthews going to Indiana trying to fill the void with Victor Oladipo. But other guys, Robin Lopez could be on the market at some point. The big name, though, is Carmelo Anthony. Now, officially a free agent, bought out by the Chicago Bulls. You hear a lot of Laker talk, but not a lot of Laker actual interest. And when I canvass the league in Carmelo, you hear like, yeah, I'm sure somebody's going to pick them up. But nobody specific is mentioned. I thought Miami might take a flyer on him because Miami will take anybody. Like, before John Wall got hurt, I think they would have gone after John Wall. Like, the money didn't bother them. The pure talent is what interests Miami. And Miami really believes that if they put a player in their system, they can get more out of him than you did. Like, that's just their general philosophy. But not really a peep from Miami, as they're kind of in a playoff fight right now. Is it possible that we've seen the last NBA game for Carmelo Anthony?
It's not looking good. It's not looking good. The longer this drags out, it could. Remember when Tracy McGrady played for the Spurs, quote-unquote played? It could almost be like that, where he maybe gets picked up but is then just a non-factor. And I almost wonder if he would rather not get picked up than go sit on the end of the bench for someone and not even play. I don't know. It's not looking good, because I just don't know where he can go right now that he would have any kind of an impact. Like, what team needs him? I mean, one of these top-tier guys would probably rather have someone who plays defense or something like that. If you're a team looking to get into the playoffs, you know, look at that group. I mean, Sacramento, I don't think, is going to want to take a flyer on him. I don't see a good fit for him anywhere, which is sad, because the Rockets made so much sense at the start of the season. That was the one that just was like, yeah, he can stand on the wing, he can shoot threes, you know, come off the bench, play with Chris Paul, and, you know, for whatever reasons there are, it just didn't work out. I just don't see a fit for him. I'm really starting to get nervous, because, you know, you see a guy like Dwayne Wade go out with this, the way his career's ended. You know, guys of Melo's stature, they deserve that. I just don't see where he fits right now, and I don't see who's going to want to take the chance on him.
Yeah.
Unless it's one of his guys, Wade or LeBron, saying, hey, come on.
It didn't work out for Carmelo in Oklahoma City for the same reason it didn't work out in Houston. When you are bringing in players that are playing a 7th, 8th, 9th man role, you value versatility. That's why, was it Jeremy Grant in Oklahoma City? He kind of pushed Melo out in terms of rotation minutes, because he's more versatile defender player, more athletic. Same thing at the time with James Ennis and some other guys down in Houston. Carmelo, if you're a team that just badly needs like an influx of scoring, that's why, like, I didn't think Indiana was going to happen, but I could kind of see it in the back of my head. Like, all right, they lose Oladipo. That's a big-time scorer for them. Maybe you take a flyer on Carmelo. See if you can work him into your kind of isolation-heavy offense there. But other teams, you just it's none of it just makes sense. You know, maybe, like, here's what I'd like to see happen to Carmelo. Like, if he really wanted it, and if this team would do it, like, just sign with Golden State. Just go get your – if Golden State misses out, you know, I think they'd like to add a big. But if they miss out on a big and they have a roster spot open, just go sign Carmelo. Just get him an NBA championship. Carmelo's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, no question. I mean, people laugh like, oh, his NBA stats. He's just a stat stuffer. Dude won 4 gold medals and a college basketball national
and
championship.
Those Nuggets teams were very good.
Yes.
Those Nuggets teams were very good. Those Knicks, the early years, I mean, the Knicks have ruined more people than Carmelo Anthony has. Let me just put it that way.
They have. The Knicks were, I thought his time with D'Antoni in New York was more Carmelo than it was D'Antoni.
Sure.
I think Carmelo was, at that point of his career, was too obstinate to kind of evolve the way he's trying to evolve right now. But if it's not Miami picking him up for the stretch run, I don't know who it is. I mean, the Lakers, wouldn't they have done it by now?
That's
what
I'm thinking. Yeah,
come and gone.
They had their chances.
Plus, you have to imagine, like, Carmelo has been active for the last, you know, before he got let go. He hasn't played since, what, early November?
It's been a long time.
He played 10 games this season.
I will say, just to add some fuel to the Miami speculation that we're kind of just drumming up ourselves right now, I do believe Miami needs to add a player. I think they've had 13 guys for 2 weeks or whatever the limit is, so pretty soon they're going to need to make a roster move. I don't know if that would force their hand. I mean, they have 2 G League guys that they're probably going to sign instead, but there's a reason for that Miami makes sense.
Yeah, so maybe he goes there and they try to extract something out of him, because that's a team that just wants to make the playoffs, like, no matter what. I wrote something earlier today. We all did something on where Zion Williamson should land. I took Miami.
Like, that would be awesome.
Like, screw the tankers. Like, give it to the team that for the last, you know, 5, 10, whatever years between Riley and Spoelstra that has always tried to make the playoffs, give it to them. Like, listen, reward that
you
team.
You don't need to convince me about rewarding the Heat, baby. Let's do it.
There you go.
Let's get Zion there.
All right, so Carmelo. All right, so best guess right now to button this up. Carmelo, yes or no, plays in the NBA again?
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes, because I think somebody, if it's not this year, somebody gives him like a training camp invite or something happens.
Do you think so?
Maybe the Lakers like invite him to training camp next year.
Nice.
If they don't get anybody this offseason, maybe they bring him.
Oh, my God. That would be so depressing.
Carmelo Anthony.
We couldn't get Anthony Davis. We got Carmelo Anthony.
It's 2006. When you wake up, it's 2006, yeah. We swear. Rohan, always appreciate it, man. Good to do this in the SI offices, hanging out face-to-face. Always good. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, man. You look nice and tan. I hope you had a great vacation.
I did. And I hope you had a great quasi-vacation in Charlotte with the rest of the
Okay, I had a lovely time. Can I say one more thing about Charlotte?
Absolutely.
The Uber drivers got to relax, man. Just way too chatty Uber drivers.
You live in New York City. Oh, yeah, New York City, they don't talk.
The Uber drivers don't say shit to you in New York City. Yeah. Now, listen. Charlotte was lovely. I had a great time. Very underrated food scene. A lot of good places to eat in Charlotte. Very easy to get around. I had a lovely time. But these Uber drivers, just talking way too much. It's 7 a.m. I'm trying to go to the airport. This isn't the time to tell me about, you know, the school newspaper your son writes for. I'm sorry.
Wow. Okay, diva. All right, on that note, when we come back, my conversation with Hornets guard Kemba Walker.
All right, so before anything else, All-Star, getting to start in the city that you play in, just tell me what that means to you.
It's kind of hard to put it into words, but I'll do as best as I could. It's kind of, it's surreal, actually. You know, it's like a dream come true, you know, not, I think every kid, you know, growing up, you know, watching All-Star games their whole lives and stuff like that, you know, they dream of getting the opportunity to actually be an All-Star. And then, you know, once you get that, it's like another step comes and, you know, you think about being an All-Star starter, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. For me, individually, it's crazy. And then, you know, it's here in the same city that, you know, I've been in for 8 seasons now. I'm super excited, you know, to represent, you know, this city, you know, this organization, and my family, in this game as a starter. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's almost, it's an individual culmination of a long road that you've taken to get this point. And a lot of people know your story, but there are a couple of things in researching your story that really interests me. Is it true that you used to dance for money?
I knew this was coming.
Is this was coming? Okay.
I told you that, my mom.
did some homework. I did some homework. We'll put it that way. Did you dance for money outside of a laundromat?
I don't remember. I don't remember. That's what they say. I guess I was a young boy when I was doing it. Mm-hmm. But, I don't really remember.
Did you also have, you performed at the Apollo Theater, mm-hmm. is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
And the name of your group was Future Flavors?
I don't remember.
That was another one that I came across.
Yeah.
What was the performing at the Apollo like, though?
It was amazing, man. It was, you know, I think, you know, growing up in New York, being a New York City kid, you know, knowing the history of the Apollo, so that was fun, man. It was an unbelievable moment for me. I got a chance to perform there a few times, and yeah, it was fun at the time.
When did basketball really take hold for you as a kid?
I think I really started to get serious in the eighth grade. You know, playing junior high school basketball, we had a tournament. It was the first year of this league. I went to a school, it was called Eugene, Team Alaska 174. And we had a team, and like I said, it was the first year of this basketball league. Because at first you would just play, but you would just play against other schools and things like that, but you wasn't really playing for anything until they made this league. And we won it the first year. And I think I played well, and I think I got MVP of the league, and that's when I really, really, really started to take it serious from that point on.
What was more competitive, the structured games in eighth grade or in high school, or some of those pickup games you played on the playground?
Oh, man, I'm definitely going to have to say the games on the playground. Mm-hmm. Just because those are the games that kind of made me who I am. You know, I went from being kicked off the court by those guys in my neighborhood, because all the older guys, I'll be on the court before them, then they'll come like, all right, Kemba, it's time to move, we're about to play, we're about to start playing now. So just get on the side, watch us until I got a little bit older and a little bit better. Then it became, all right, we got Kemba. we got him, I got him. So
when did that happen? When did it go from Kemba get off to we got Kemba? Was there a moment?
Probably when I got into high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when things really started to change for me a little bit in my neighborhood. I think when I got to high school, that's when guys really started to realize, like, he is pretty good. So, yeah.
What do you learn in those type of situations? I mean, in the structured basketball, you're learning, you know, certain drills, certain mm-hmm. fundamentals. But in those games itself, what do you take from it?
For me, I think that's where my fearlessness comes, my toughness, my resiliency. Me getting to the basket and finishing around the basket as well. I think a lot of that came from, you know, playing in the neighborhood, playing in the park from where I'm from. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think a lot of those skills, those things, those kind of mental toughness, you know, I think that came from, you know, playing against a lot of the older guys when I was young, because I've been doing that for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Playing against the best guys in my neighborhood, guys who used to be super good when they were young. But yeah, I think all those things came from, you know, where I'm from.
Who was the best guy you played against that never made it to the top level?
I'm not sure. I gotta think on that. I'm not sure right now.
Call your own fouls type of basketball?
Oh yeah.
Did anybody actually call fouls?
Not until point game. Not until the game was on the line, but barely. Mm-hmm. It was very rare that guys called fouls out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you get people showing up, like whether it was major college players, pros, just kind of filtering in? I mean, New York City basketball, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of guys came through there.
It depends. You know, where I'm from, my area, Soundview, Castle Hill. No, it's a lot of different areas where I'm from. We had a few guys, yeah. Kenny Satterfield, mm-hmm. you know, we'll play together. Andre Barrett, Corey Fisher, just to name a few. You know, we had a few guys who will come to my neighborhood, or sometimes we'll go to their neighborhoods, or sometimes we'll be on the same team in a tournament, mm-hmm. like Dykeman or like Hoops in the Sun, or Rucker Park. You know, just things like that. So it depends. You know, sometimes it'd be just a Saturday evening. You'll get a text like, "Hey, come meet on top of the hill. We playing today all day." So, yeah.
When you're playing in those games, and even as you get into high school, at what point do you start thinking, "I want to play in the NBA. That's realistic for me."
Oh, when it comes to when does it become?
I guess both. When the beginning and then realistic.
Man, I mean, for as long as I can remember, man, I've been dreaming about playing. I think everyone does, mm-hmm. man. You know, when you're a basketball player, I think you see it on TV and things like that, and you're like, man, I wish I can, you know, get there. And I've always, you know, wanted to be here. I didn't know for sure if it would become true. But when it really started to become serious to me was when I was named a McDonald's All-American. Mm-hmm. That's when I really felt like I had a chance, and that's when I really felt like I was being recognized. Because, you know, growing up, I wasn't always, you know, the big-name guy or the best guy, considered the best guy on my team. So when I was named McDonald's All-American, I mean, I think that's when it kind of became more realistic to me.
What was that experience like, going to the All-American game, sort of measuring yourself against some of the best in your age group?
Oh, it was crazy, man. It was an unbelievable moment for me. You know, not only was I there, but I started. For the East, and you know, I had to play against Brandon Jennings and Drew Holiday and those guys, and yeah, to go up against those guys who were, you know, ranked higher than me, considered to be better than me at the time and stuff like that. I was just up for the challenge. I was excited, more so excited because, you know, I was representing, you know, my whole city, you know, which is the Bronx, New York, of course. But I am from the Bronx, and, you know, that's the city that kind of made me into the player and person I am today. So, you know, I was just excited to really get that opportunity to represent, you know, New York City.
You've said in the past that your work ethic comes from your parents. They weren't athletes, were they? Or
no, well, my dad, yeah, he says he was. I never seen any footage or anything.
There's
no
footage,
no
pictures.
No footage, no anything. But yeah, leave it up to him. He was the best.
But why the? What is it you take then from your parents with their work ethic?
I think more so because how they provided for me and my siblings. You know, we weren't rich or anything, but they strive to allow us to have things. You know, my mom and dad always made sure that, you know, we had nice sneakers and nice clothes, make sure we had food to eat every single night. So yeah, you know, rain, sleet, or snow, they went to work. You know, it was rarely any missed work days for those guys. And you know, I seen that growing up as a kid. You know, my mom going to wash our clothes every Friday. You know, I mean, it was just, yeah, man, their work ethic, you know, was impeccable, second to none. So yeah, you know, I just kind of appreciated those things. Yeah, I think I definitely took after both of them.
What did they tell you about kind of chasing your dream as a basketball player?
Just give it everything I got. That's really it. But they didn't know either. They didn't know. I mean, at one point, they weren't even coming to the game. You know, I was telling them, like, Mom, Dad, like, I'm playing basketball. I think I'm pretty good. Like, come watch me play. My dad would be like, not until you get to high school. I don't know. Like, he just didn't know. But, you know, I think for them, they just wanted me to stay out of trouble. Because, you know, it's a lot of trouble in New York, especially from where we're from. You know, growing up, it was a lot of trouble around the neighborhood and stuff like that. So for them, the most important thing was that I wasn't out on the street, you know, doing anything bad. I was playing basketball, doing something that I love, and they knew I was safe doing it. So, yeah.
Was it tough to avoid those situations?
For me, no. No. I don't know why, but, you know, I think I've always had a pretty good instinct, you know, to avoid trouble. Just always making the right decisions. And growing up, I had great friends who weren't really, you know, bad people, never did a lot of the bad things and stuff like that. So, no, I've been very, very, very fortunate throughout my life, my young life, to, you know, avoid trouble.
Going to UConn, the confidence, did it give you more confidence getting there than you could be an NBA player? How did that change you, that experience?
Oh, that changed me. It was great. You know, before I got there, you know, Coach Calhoun, we were talking on the phone. Before I even committed, you know, the one thing he told me, he's like, Kemba, if you want to come to UConn, you know, we want you, but you're gonna have to come here and work for everything you want. You know, you're not gonna come, you're not gonna start right away. They already had a great team. He's like, you're not gonna start right away. Yeah, so you're gonna have to work and put the work in to become the player that you wanna be. And I respected that right off the bat. And I think that's what really caught my attention about the program and about Coach Calhoun. And that's what it was. From day one I got there, I had to work. And I think getting to UConn really increased my work ethic. Yeah, Coach Calhoun, he turned me into a beast, you know, as far as, you know, just really, you know, putting the work in. One thing he always told me, he's like, Kemba, the gym is open 24 hours. You know, I'm not talking about practice, anything. You know, he's like, it's always open. So if you want to come and get some working on your own, you can. And that's always what I did. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the Kemba-Calhoun relationship like for those 3 years? Strong at all times? Or?
Yeah, maybe once. Maybe one time when I first got there, he got me my freshman year. He got me pretty good.
How'd he get you?
My first game, it was my first big game, man. We played at Gonzaga, and we were playing against Jeremy Parker, who was, I believe he was a senior at the time. But yeah, he was working. He was working. It was tough for me, man. It was this unbelievable environment, loud. I don't think I scored that game. And I know we came into the timeout, and man, he yelled at me like I never heard somebody yell. Man, never heard anybody yell like that. But he got into me, and that was it, though. That was the first and last. I don't think he ever did it again. But I was like, he woke me up, I tell you that much. But yeah, it was definitely surprising. But I loved it, man. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. You know, he just wants to bring the best out of everyone. And I think after that, he definitely brought the best out of me. So, yeah, we've always had a very, very, very strong relationship. I mean, even to this day, you know, I mean, yeah, that's my guy right there. He's the best.
You had a storybook ending to your college career, just the run you went on in the conference tournament, the NCAA tournament, the most outstanding player there. And then you come to the NBA, and it's great that you drafted in the lottery, but going from winning to losing right away, I think it was started 3-26. There was a 16-game losing streak that first year. How did you handle that?
It was tough. You know, but for me, I just kind of looked at it as, you know, just a point of adversity, you know, in my life, in my career. I just wanted to continue to work. To become a better player, you know, I just felt like it couldn't be like that for forever. Well, I hoped it couldn't be that way for forever. But you know, had my ups and downs. You know, that season it was hard. It was hard coming into the NBA. It's just a different pace. You know, it's just a different league. You know, guys are, you know, bigger, faster, stronger. You know, you have guys who can do the same thing that I could do. Have older guys who's been there before me. So yeah, you know, there were times where, yeah, I just didn't even know if I belonged, really. I was struggling. You know, it just wasn't the same thing like I was doing the year before in college, you know what I mean? And then it was a lockout year, so we started pretty late. So it was different. But, you know, I had to adjust. I had to become better. I had to increase my work ethic. I had to go harder. That's just what I had to do. So, you know, what I did was I just dedicated my summers to hard work. I could have easily, you know, been having fun in the summers and stuff like that, but I just wanted to become a better player. And that's how I approach all my summers. You know, I just wanted to be better. I really, truly feel that the summers is where you really, you know, get better, working your game more.
Did any, those first couple of years for you, did any doubts creep in individually about, well, man, I mean, is this going to work out? I mean, you're losing as much as you are. I mean, it was a little bit better that second year, but still only 21 wins in that second year.
Yeah. I think more so my first year. I think I averaged about 12 points my rookie year. And yeah, a lot of doubts, I just I just wasn't sure what kind of player I would be in this league until the next year. You know, we weren't winning as much. We won more games, but it wasn't enough to get into the playoffs or anything like that. We were still the bottom of the batch, but I had a better year. I think I was just 17 that year, and I was a starter. I think I started to gain more confidence after my second year, just knowing that. I think I felt better about myself, knowing that you know, I can compete with anybody, and I can go up against anybody, even the best of the best. So yeah.
When you look at turning points in your career, you know, whether it's off seasons, coaching changes, moments, things that have really helped you become the player as a pro that mm-hmm. you are today, what do you think about?
Coach Cliff. Mm-hmm. Coach Clifford, man. I think he's the one who really helped me boost my confidence in this league the highest. You know, he came in and he told me, he's like, yeah, I watch film on you, and the first thing I've noticed is you're a competitor. He said, I love the way you compete. He said, you can't teach that. And he told me that I was gonna have to work on my three ball. He said, too many guys are going under the screens. And he's like, if you can work on your three-point shot and get it more consistent, you can be an all-star in this league, and you will be an all-star in this league. And that from that point on, it was history. You know, that year, I think I shot it a little bit better. Still not enough. But we got to the playoffs that year. And when we got to the playoffs, we got swept in the first round by Miami. But I think that year gave me tons of confidence, especially getting into that playoff series. It was fun. Something that, you know, I wanted to continue to be a part of. And that next summer, he hired a shooting coach. His name is Bruce, and he asked me to work with him. And Bruce kind of changed my shot, which I didn't like at first, but.
Nobody really ever likes that. Even if they know it's right, it's a personal thing, isn't
it? It's tough.
To change your shot.
I think at the time I was 24, and I'm like, man, I've been shooting this way for a long time. So I don't know if I'm really willing to change my form at this point in my life. But he asked me to stick with it. He asked me to stick with it, and you know, I had great trust in him. I did. The rest is history, man. I worked so hard on it each and every day. A lot of misses, I tell you that much. A lot of misses, a lot of frustration. But it was a challenge, you know, that I had to adjust to, and I did. And you know, now I'm a much, much better shooter. So
you said that Cliff basically said you had to work hard. It sounds like similar things that what you said about what Calhoun said to you. Mm-hmm. Was there similarities there?
Yeah, some similarities. I mean, but I think he already knew that I worked hard. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the problem. It wasn't even about working hard. It was more so about trusting in Bruce, you know, just believing in him to help me with my shot. Like I said, you know, I didn't want to change it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stick with my old shot and my old form and the way that I've been doing it for a long time. But, you know, people have to adjust. You know, people have to make changes, you know, at some point in their lives. And, you know, I just had to accept that. I needed to change, and I needed to listen to Bruce and not be stubborn about it. And that's what I did. You know, I just really locked in on it, and the rest is history.
What made you finally give in to say, I'll adjust?
Well, I started making. That's all it was. I started making shots, and it'll be times where, you know, we'll be upstairs and, you know, we'll be doing a drill, shooting drill, and I would miss a bunch of shots in a row. And Bruce, he'll come to me, he'll say, all right, you need to pick your pace up, and you need to fix your balance, you need to get and be on your toes. And I'll fix it, and I'll just go like on a streak, just 10 in a row. I'm like, wow, like, this guy really knows what he's talking about. So just listen to him. So yeah, then, you know, start to make him in the game. Consistently, more than ever. Then I became an all-star. And I'm like, man, love Bruce. You know, we were working every day, every single day. We would get some type of work in. So, yeah.
as a New Yorker playing in the NBA, you've become one of those guys the kids look up to, the kids that are, you know, doing step backs in these practices. How often do you, if at all, do you go back to those courts and maybe even play or observe? I mean, what's the rules now for you?
I can't play nowadays. my knees don't work that way. But it's been a while. It's been a while since I've been back to the court. I used to go back all the time, like just to the games, Dykeman, Rucker, and things like that. But it's been a little bit of a while since I've been back.
When you were going back, did you see kids doing stuff that you do?
Yeah, a few times I've seen the young kids doing some step backs and stuff. But you know, I do camps and stuff in New York as well, you know, which is always a really good turnout. And last summer I actually did my first annual Kemba Walker camp in the Bronx, which was an amazing turnout. But yeah, I definitely see the kids mimicking the step back. You know that I had it, of course, in the Garden against Pitt. So yeah, it's cool. I love it because, you know, that's where I'm from, and I know how hard it can be, you know, for a young kid to make it out of that city. You know, a lot of distractions. You know, a lot of bad things going on. So I just try to be that role model. You know, for these kids, you know, let them know that it's possible, because I truly feel that if I can do it, man, anyone can, especially at my size. I think that plays a factor into it as well. You know, being a smaller guy, you know, not everybody's going to be 6'5", 6'6", so yeah, I just try to be that inspiration to the kids.
You've got the unique experience of playing on a team that's owned by the greatest of all time. Your first interaction with Michael Jordan was when? What do you remember about it?
My first interaction with MJ was my draft workout here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember he was just sitting on the side. I remember I was nervous, but like I gotta try my best to impress him. I think I did. But yeah, it was a really fun workout. All I remember is he was talking trash, which he usually does a lot. So he was talking trash in the sideline, but it was fun. It was a fun workout.
Talking trash to you, how?
I remember they had us, they put two balls on the floor and they were like trying to have us palm the basketballs. And as I'm going up, he's like, man, get out of there. You can't palm the ball like that. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I didn't even try. I'm just like, yeah, you're right. I can't palm it. But you know, just stuff like that. He's a good dude. He's the best, man. Really super down to earth. So, you know, really good guy to be around.
Could you ever imagined, you know, as a kid that you'd have unfettered access basically to Michael Jordan?
No. Not at all. This is like every time people ask me, I'm like, it's still kind of like surreal. It's still surreal whenever he's around. He'll just be sitting there just chilling, you know, just chilling. But I'm like, that's MJ, you know. And you know, I can text him, I can call him anytime, and he responds right away. And that's a special feeling to have. But yeah, like I said, it's still kind of unreal at times, you know. Just that's the greatest player of all time right there. Yeah, just super down to earth. Like it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Do you reach out a lot? I mean, how often do you reach out to him, and about what?
He reaches out more than me, because he's always.
Do you ever like leave your phone on the table just so somebody could see it? It's like it says like Michael.
Nah.
Just Michael texting. It's just Mike.
Nah, he usually writes me after games. Mm-hmm. Because he watches all the games, and you know, he's either telling me, you know, some things that, you know, I could have done better. Mostly leadership things. I think he's more so big on that. It's never about misses or makes or anything like that. It's more so about, you know, my energy on the court and my focus and my leadership role. that's more sort of things that he's looking for in me. So yeah, I mean, he definitely reaches out a lot, and especially, you know, when I accomplish things like just being in the starter, one of the starters in the game, he was super proud of that, super happy. He texted me about that as well. So yeah, he's always on top of it. Yeah.
How has he influenced you as a leader?
Oh man, huge influence. Huge influence. I think a lot of people know what kind of leader he was. One of the greatest leaders ever to play this game. You know, I've heard a lot of stories about his leadership. I don't know if we lead the same. You know, we lead probably a little different. But yeah, he's been a huge influence, especially when they first allowed me, when he first told me that I am the leader of this team and of this organization. He just handed me the keys, and I was pretty young too. So it was an honor. It was an honor to get that kind of recognition from him, because he sees that in me. And you know, to this day, he's still, you know, helping me become a better leader each and every day. You know, I'm still learning. But you know, I have great teammates as well, you know, who allow me to be myself and allow me to lead them, you know, the way that I lead.
You've embraced this city, you know, the kid from New York come to Charlotte, but you've really connected, it seems like, with the city, with this community. And you know, you got emotional last year when your name was floated around in trade talks. What is it about this city that you feel such a strong connection to?
Just a city that believes in me, believed in me for a very long time. You know, when I had doubts on myself not being able to, you know, thinking that I might not make it in the league, the fans still supported me. And, you know, on draft night, I had no idea where I was going. I heard a lot of rumors, a lot of doubts that I was slipping in the draft, things like that. But these guys traded up for me and took a chance on me, allowed me to play through so many mistakes from, you know, when I was young, allowed me to grow as a player and as a person, you know, allowed me to get out in the community and meet the people, meet the fans. So yeah, I mean, you know, I've been here for eight seasons now, so you know, I call this place home. And you know, I definitely have a lot of respect and love for this city, as well as they have a lot of respect and love for me. You know, I'm able to do things that maybe a lot of other players can't do in their cities. I don't know, but you know, I'm able to walk freely, not be overwhelmed. Really just enjoy myself when I'm not playing basketball. So I think that's really important for me.
You're going into All-Star. It's your city representing Charlotte. And a lot of people are going to be asking you, will there be season 9, 10, 11 in Charlotte? What's your mindset right now as you look towards the summer?
I don't know. I've never been a free agent. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know where to start.
Does it make you nervous at all? I mean, is there...
No, honestly, I don't think about it. I don't think about it. I'm really just focused on the season. I'm just trying to get to the playoffs. That's really it. And the reason I don't think about it is because I just don't know. I just don't know what to expect. You know what I mean? Like, I've never had meetings with any other teams or anything like that. So, yeah, I just don't know.
Do you feel like this team is in a good position to be a winner in the next few years? Because I would imagine that's important to you, winning. It's important to Michael, of course. Mm-hmm. There was a coaching change recently. Do you feel like this team's on a good path towards winning?
I think we can be. I think we have some good young pieces. Do I think we might need some more? Yeah, I think we need more. But that's not up to me. You know, that's up to the guys upstairs, the guys behind the scenes to make those moves. and make those adjustments to make this team better. As well as, you know, it's on the guys on this team to become better as well. And that's dedicating their summers, you know, to becoming better players and things like that. So it's a lot of moving pieces to it.
How many hours of sleep are you going to get during All-Star Weekend?
Not much.
I would imagine they're going to keep you pretty busy.
Yeah, I'm going to be pretty busy, man. I'm going to be pretty busy, but I guess that's what happens when All-Star is in your city. Yeah.
Well, Kemba, congratulations on everything, and thanks for joining us here.
No problem, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.